to another edition of the Knowles Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Carter Carls. It is Thursday, December 22nd. Florida State just added 22 players to its roster on the first day of the three-day early signing period. That is 15 high school players, 6 transfers, and 1 JUCO player. So me and Essen decided to press record and just talk about this class, what it means for Florida State in the big picture, and just talked about a few of the players in the class and also looked ahead to the 2024 class. So here is my talk with Essen. Okay, I'm here with Essen to talk about Florida State's 2023 recruiting class. As of now, as of Thursday morning, we see that Florida State has 22 signees. That means 15 high school signees, 1 JUCO signee, and 6 transfers. So a little bit different, new age of college football now, Essen, where we're counting transfers as signees. That I don't remember that like ever happening in previous years, but that's just kind of the nature of college football. But looking at Florida State's class right now, they're ranked number 20 on 247, 20th on 3, and 29th on Rivals. Essen, let's just get to it. What do you think about this class?
You know, I think we talked about it a little bit is for just talking about the high school side, it's a high upside class. They got some great, some good players. Obviously, Tyke Williams being the highlight. It's a good high school class. And if you look at the composite average score, it would rank top 15, top 12 probably if they had more commitments. But I think it's 15, so. It's an overall deep class, but it's going to be interesting to see that they focus on the transfer portal, which is ranked number 2 on 24/7. So it's a good class. Got some talent, got some top-end talent. I like the class. It was interesting how Norvell talked about it yesterday. He mentioned, one thing he mentioned was they went heavy on the recruiting side, on the transfer side for wide receivers last year. This year, they focused on the high school class, and they got some good guys, and he said they can make an immediate impact.
Yeah, I really like Hakeem Williams, and also really like Vendravius Jacobs, All Day Dre. I think that kid's highly underrated. But just generally speaking about the class, something that people I'm sure know, but it's always good to remind folks that when you take a smaller amount of guys, they're going to, I believe in 247, Rivals, and On3, they count the JUCO player, Jaden Jones, out of Hutchinson. So 16 guys, that's a small class with high school. So you're not going to be ranked very high. I mean, all of them would need to be 4 or 5 stars for it to be a, top 10 class. But when you have only 16 guys, of course, you're going to be in the 20s. And that's not excusing it. I think you look at the class and having more 3 stars than you have 4+5 stars, they call it blue chip ratio, that's not good. They got 9 3 stars out of 16 players in the class. That's not a good ratio to have if you want to build a roster that can contend for national championships. But you look at the top of the class, it's a very top-heavy class is what I talk about. Lucas Simmons, that could be your future left tackle. That kid is a special player. He is the highest-ranked offensive tackle that Florida State has signed since Landon Dickerson in the 2016 class per 247 Sports. Then you look at Hakeem Williams. Since Rivals, since 2003, he'd be the third. He's the third highest ranked receiver that Florida State has signed on Rivals. So you've got some guys at the top of the class who can be special All American type players for this team. But the entire class, there's not just this loaded class of there's 12 guys that are going to be phenomenal. There might only be 4 or 5 that are going to be great players. And that's what happens when most of your class is 3 stars, and that's the one problem I would just identify. But I think there is a lot to like. There's a lot to not like. We'll go into the day and Celtic Falk and everything else here throughout the podcast. But just generally speaking, I think you feel decent about the class, but you don't feel incredible. But you know, there's also the transfer component of it that you mentioned. They're number 2 on 247, and I wrote this in my story, my analysis after this. You can't ignore transfers when it comes to this equation. They're part of the equation. When you include them, it looks more like a top 15 class. But Essen, let's dive in a little bit more to that phenomenon with transfers. You know, it seems like they're still making transfers a priority. That's why they've taken a smaller class. They're already up to 6 now, and it seems like they're going to be adding a few more. Last 3 classes, double-digit transfers. It looks like it's going to be another double-digit class of transfers this time.
Yeah, I think an interesting thing people need to note is it's not just a recruiting class anymore. It's an open scholarship kind of class instead of, you know, just a recruiting standpoint. So you're just trying to fill spots on the team more than anything else. And interesting thing what Norvell said is, like, you know, the interest for Florida State from the high school level and from the transfer market is elite, is what he said yesterday at his press conference. But Florida State, and Norvell mentioned this as well, is they're not going to sign anyone. They don't care if you're the number one recruit, you know, recruit in the nation. You have to be a fit at Florida State. You have to be someone that's going to come in and make sense on the team. Talking to Coach Dugans yesterday, the wide receiver coach, he mentioned that, you know, the important thing about Hiking Williams, that's the biggest thing about him, is he wants to be a teammate. He wants to help his teammates. He wants to get his team to the next level. Norvell mentioned the same thing about Kyle Murlock, is that he wants to come in and fit in, like, you know, and how he wants to hit. What he said mentioned was how he's going to take the team to the next level. So for Florida State, it's not about adding the most talent all the time, which is important. Talent's important, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also about making sure it's the right fit and making sure the player is going to get Florida State to the next level. So what they signed yesterday and what they're adding to the class, like I mentioned, it's a talent acquisition more than just a high school.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to add the recruiting side. I get it. I understand that. I think we've talked a little bit about this off, you know, recording. Is it sustainable?
Yeah.
Just on the recruiting side, on the transfer side.
Well, I look at this, what they're doing this cycle, and, you know, it may be a wacky comparison, but it's somewhat comparable to what the Los Angeles Rams did a few years ago, where they just decided, you know what, it's a little bit more extreme, but they decided, you know what, we don't care about the draft anymore. We're going to trade all our picks to get, you know, Jalen Ramsey and Matthew Stafford, and, you know, we're going to go out and get OBJ, you know, all these things. And they went all in on the now, and they'll worry about later, and it gave them a Super Bowl. And I look at what Florida State's at as a program right now. What do you need? You need difference makers immediately. So, like, I look at the tight end room, for an example. What's a better thing for you? You know, that's going to be a big position of weakness looking, you know, a month ago out of next season. You think, oh, man, Cameron McDonald's leaving. Who's left in that room? And would you rather get, you know, a really good 3-star that you like in the 2023 class, or a guy that you know is going to be awesome immediately in Jaheim Bell out of South Carolina and Kyle Morlock out of Shorter? You take the transfer every day of the week. You know, the portal is more about the win now guys, and right now Florida State is in win now mode. You know, you don't take a ton of high school guys, because those guys may not see the field for 2 or 3 years. So to me, I see them in win now mode, kind of like the Rams was. But the one thing about that is, okay, 2023 is the year. They're going to have Jordan Travis. They're going to have Trey Benson. They may have Jared Verse. We'll see. But after that, when all those guys leave, who are going to be left? That's why high school recruiting is so important, because they need to find that next quarterback. They need to find the next Trey Benson, right? And so I think they've done a really good job on the offensive side of recruiting. I think they've loaded up on the O-line really well. Running back, Sam Singleton, you know, fantastic running back. They've got a loaded room there. Wide receiver, they're finally getting their act together. They finally got it figured out. Tight end, they're finally figuring it out. The two great transfers. Quarterback, I really am high on the 2024 kid, Luke Cromanhoek, but defense is where I have some questions. And I think that's the question, is you look at 2023 and you say, okay, I think they're putting it together to where this is a team that can win the ACC championship next year. But in 2024, if they don't recruit well enough on the trail, and if they don't, you know, kind of fill these voids that Jordan Travis is going to leave, that Johnny Wilson's going to leave, et cetera, what are they going to be left with? So that's kind of the way of looking at it, in my opinion. And I think it's why you've had so much of a polarizing way of looking at it. Just looking at Twitter and what fans are saying and the emails I get, some fans are like, the sky is falling. We can't recruit. Like, what's going on? And then other guys are like, hey, dude, like, it's not all about high school recruiting anymore. It's all about everything now. And did the team get better? Are they going to be better next year? Yes. So stop complaining. So it's really interesting to see the philosophies. I think time will tell which one is more correct.
I think you made a great point about, you know, it was a great comparison to the Rams. I think the main difference is what you also pointed out is they have Hakeem Williams. They have, Brock Glenn, and they have Singleton, who are, like, you know, the next wave of stars for this team, probably, more than likely. So that helps. But like you mentioned, the defense, I have questions about it next year as well, Even if Jared Verse returns. We saw they had a stretch where they dominated, defense looked elite, but then we saw what happens when they play the best defense since they played, was it Wake Forest, I think, that we talked about? The best offense since Wake Forest, and we saw that everything we're worried about, like the run defense, is still a major question going into next year. I think that's fair to say, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, 2024, when Verse is gone, when we don't know about Fabian Lovett, I'm leaning towards he's probably not coming back, but we don't have intel on that, so we can't say one way or the other.
Yeah, 2023, but, you mean, yeah.
Yeah. So for 2023, but 2024 is like, you know, yeah, Patrick Payton, if Payton has a good year next year, he could be someone that's going to be talking about leaving as well, because he's going to be a redshirt sophomore next year.
Yeah.
So you could lose even more talent from that defense. Who's replacing these guys? Greedy Vance, do we know if he's coming back even next year or not? It's a major question. And the defensive back room is something they haven't really filled yet. So that's a question for next year as well. I think you need high school kids for that. You need transfer players for that. And I'm not sure if they've addressed defensive back at all. I think that's a weakness right now as well.
Well, I'm concerned about DB development. Like, I see a lot of players that get into the DB room and they don't get better throughout their careers. I'm not going to single out anybody, but like, you just look at that room. There aren't a lot of guys that get better as they go in through the system, whereas you see every other room, Patrick Payton, Kalen DeLoach, all the O-linemen, the receivers, like they're all getting better. So I have questions even when they get the talent, can they develop them properly? I think that's the biggest question mark on this roster that Mike Norvell's got to consider. But I do think this defense had some fraudulent tendencies where it was like, okay, they look really good against the backup quarterback against Georgia Tech. They look really good against a banged up Syracuse team that is completely lost. They look really good against Louisiana. But, okay, what happens when they face Anthony Richardson and Clemson and Sam Hartman? That didn't go very well. So next year, I see this offense being once again a top 10 offense in college football. Jordan Travis, once again, top 10 quarterback in college football. Maybe a Heisman finalist next year. We will see. But the defense is where I think that the questions are, and I don't think they're done with the portal yet. You know, they added a D tackle and Daryl Jackson. I could see them adding at safety. They're obviously going after the Virginia corner, Cypress. So we'll see what happens there. I still think they can improve on that side of the ball, and it's not over yet. But going back to the high school class, SN, any more thoughts on just kind of overall, or do you want to start kind of breaking down a couple individual guys? Yeah, obviously the top of the class is really impressive. Is there anyone that kind of stands out to you that you think's worth talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about Andre Otto. You know, I wish I was a scout that got to go to Key West and hang out over there for a couple of days to scout him and, you know, just talk to him and figure that out. but he's a big dude. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready to play right away, but that could be the future of, you know, Florida State, because 6'5", 310 pounds. Yeah. He's, you know, looks like a strong kid. He could be the future of the offensive line. As good as Lucas Simmons might, it could be, you know, I think Andre Otto's going to be a name that people need to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, they've got a ton of developmental guys at the bottom of the group. I mean, I'm thinking about, obviously, Jaden Jones is a guy who went the JUCO route. But one guy I think is worth mentioning, Edwin Joseph, somebody who, I mean, you know, I used to cover Notre Dame, and they used to take guys like this all the time, where it was like he was a receiver his entire high school career, and then last 2 years, he says, you know what, I'm going to play DB, and then all these colleges get interested in him out of nowhere. You know, Notre Dame, they ended up being one of the better developmental programs because of their academic restrictions. They kind of had to be, and that's why they got in the playoff. They had so many three-stars that ended up popping. Well, this is kind of that example of a guy who was a late bloomer that schools like Michigan and OU got into at the end of this process here. He played receiver, you know, the whole time, and then this past summer says, you know what, I'm going to play DB. And as soon as he starts playing corner, everybody in the country started to notice him, including Florida State. Miami was on this kid. You know, he's listed at about 6'1", 180, so some decent length there. But yeah, that you like when your three stars are guys that have high upside. You don't just want to get a guy who's like, eh, they had to get him because he was their 30th option on the board. But, you know, you can get a guy like Edwin Joseph, who every team in the country was in on, and really he could end up being a four-star level player. I like getting a guy like that. Vandrevious Jacobs, I mean, there's been sort of this controversy around him with what he's rated. People think that he should be a four-star. 247 Rivals, they've always been like, he's more of a three-star. I believe 247 has him as a four-star now, but he led the state in receiving touchdowns this year. The state of Florida, you know, the state that has freakish athletes like Hakeem Williams all across the state, to lead the state of Florida in receiving this season is unbelievably impressive. Lamont Green, obviously, being the son of Lamont Green Sr. So there's some guys in that middle to bottom mix there that I really like, that, you know, probably don't get mentioned as much as Hakeem Williams, Lucas Simmons, Blake Nicholson, you know, those kind of guys.
I think, going back to Joseph, a comparison I've heard this past week, and it's not apples to apples, but was Trayvon Diggs, who is your Cowboys, you know? Yeah. But when I was at Alabama, he was signed as a wide receiver at the time over there. And out of necessity, and out of just like, how are you going to play in this wide receiver room, even though you're talented? You know, he's the younger brother of Stephon Diggs. Out of just all of that, they're like, Nick Saban approached him and said, you want to move the cornerback? Because I can't remember who was in the receiver room, but you know, the Alabama room's been loaded. For like, I think Calvin Ridley was there. It might have been, I think it was after Amari Cooper. But it was just a ridiculously stacked wide receiver room for Alabama, like it is every year except this year. But he went out there and started playing quarterback, which he hadn't done much, I think, since high school, and maybe a little bit because he's a younger brother of a NFL star.
Yeah.
So they're not going to ask him to play too much both ways. But yeah, he made his name out there at defensive back. And I think that's an interesting comparison because I think that could be Edmund Joseph could play himself, make him, because he's still developing as a cornerback.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time, but he could be someone that could be a name to watch out in a few years.
He needs to be developed, though. I'm telling you, that DB room.
That's another point.
I don't know. But we got to talk about Hakeem Williams for sure because this is one guy that I think no matter what comes from him in year one, I think you're okay if he's not. I mean, like, with how explosive this offense is going to be, he's in a great situation. He doesn't need to be the star right away. You know, when they were pursuing him 2 years ago, they're probably thinking, you're going to be our number one guy right away. Well, now he probably doesn't need to be if Johnny Wilson's coming back. And I think that's kind of the situation that suits him the best because you just talk to people who have followed this kid and know his skill set well. They say that he is the ultimate upside guy who obviously he has a high floor. Like he's a five-star for a reason, but like it's going to take him a little bit to learn more the nuances, the offense, the, how to block all those like little things that go with being a star receiver. Like he's going to need to kind of develop a little bit that way. But from an athletic standpoint, the jump out the gym, best athlete on the field, he's got it. I mean, he may be the greatest athlete on this roster from the moment that he steps onto the field. So why I say upside there is when you have that freakish athleticism, as long as you're at least competent when it comes to blocking and running routes and all those things, you're going to be an incredible receiver. It's a matter of him getting in and, learning those nuances of the game that will help him kind of accelerate through the program. So it's not a guarantee that he's going to be day one starter, that he's going to be the second leading receiver next year or anything like that. I think he has a good chance to do those things, but the expectations for him right away should be a little bit manageable. But obviously down the road, his upside, I mean, he could be one of the better receivers that has ever played in this program, which, I mean, that's really saying something.
No, I mean, I think it's a good point. And just something saw at practice is Darian Williamson is back and looking healthy, and that when he is healthy and playing well, he's as good as any receiver on that roster. He made a diving catch yesterday. It was fun to watch. So it's going to be fun to see that wide receiver room. It's going to be fun to watch those practices because as we've been out there, we've seen those. They push each other. They love pushing each other. They love making highlight catches and, one-upping each other. So it's going to be interesting to watch them next year in practice because I'm telling you, watching those wide receivers is more fun in practice than in games sometimes just because of what we can see, what they do and the catches they can make and just it's fun.
It's a loaded – like I'm not going to say there's a bunch of – stars in the room, but it's like a bunch of pretty good players that like really just get after it in practice. Like I think Johnny Wilson is probably the guy who's like has the star capability. Like we've seen him be a star against Louisville and things like that, but beyond that it's just a lot of guys that are pretty good. And so you in practice you see like eight guys who are around kind of the similar level who are really, getting after it. It's fun. And I think Hakeem Williams, day one, will be in that group. And,
Hakeem Williams has already built a strong – I mean, being a five-star, being a well-known and committing to Florida, he's already – Florida State, he's already built a strong fan base and liking. But his comment yesterday in his IG Live about – during his commitment of, I'm not Travis Hunter, is going to resonate really well with fans. So.
Yeah, and so backstory on that – apparently Colorado had been calling him all day. Deion been hitting up his phone saying, "Hey man, want to make it 2 years in a row of me flipping an FSU five star?" And Hakeem, you know what you like about him, man, is a loyal kid who, when he committed to FSU, he committed to FSU. He had so many big programs going after him when it comes to Miami and A&M and Georgia and Alabama, and he stuck through it. He visited FSU's campus many, many times, and he was an active part of this class, trying to recruit other people and really always supportive openly of FSU.
Yeah, one thing that should be noted about, you know, staying loyal is talking to Dugans yesterday, he mentioned that Stranahan High School in Fort Lauderdale, there was schools that came and tried to get Hakeem to transfer and go win the state championship, and Hakeem stayed loyal to that. So that says a lot about him. And that could be interesting is, you know, in the NIL era, there could be, if Hakeem is, I don't see him redshirting, but if he doesn't get the playing time he wants, is there a chance he transfers because someone's going to throw the bag at him? I think with his back, less chance of that, less likelihood. He's probably in this class for the long haul.
Yeah, I think that's another that reminds me. I think people who are anti-high school recruiting or the people that are like, it's not a big deal, is they realize, well, shoot, we might get really excited about a guy like Hakeem, and he might transfer 2 years later. Like, why do I need to get excited about this? Or they might say, you know, I'd rather get a guy who's transferring and he knows where he wants to go, and, you know, and he's already a good player, and so we don't have to worry about the playing time crap and all that sort of thing. So I fully understand that, and so I think that's why it's important to get a blend of guys who will play for you, Hakeem Williams, Blake Nicholson, and then get some of those high upside guys that are three stars. Another guy worth mentioning, Lucas Simmons, four-star guy out of Clearwater Academy. Another guy where, you know, O-line, you don't like to put them in the microwave. You want to put them in the oven. Keep them baking for a while. You don't want this guy playing for you until year two, year three at least. Same thing could be said about Julian Armella. I mean, if he had to play year one at FSU, that would have been bad for his development. And so kudos to Alex Atkins getting some transfers and turning around what was really a bad room into a pretty good unit. And I think you're starting to get to a point on this team, on this O-line, where you don't need to play true freshman anymore. You know, you don't need to bring out Robert Scott and Darius Washington and have them play right away. You can have these guys bake in the oven and really develop the way that they need to be developed. Because some of these guys, you know, you mentioned Chris Otto, like some of these guys, they need to get in with storms and gain 30 pounds or lose 30 pounds or gain muscle or get quicker. And if you're just throwing them out to the wolves game one, that's not good for their development. They can't properly learn the way they should. So, you know, a guy like Lucas Simmons, yeah, it's exciting. I wouldn't expect him to play year one or anything. And I think that's okay. Like you want this guy to not be on the field until year two or year three. But the future with Alex Atkins is very bright because you've got that blend of guys that can play now, and you've got those guys that are, you know, like we say, in the oven a little bit, that, you know, two years down the road, your starting O-line will be guys that you did recruit out of the high school and not a bunch of transfers.
I think that's a good point. I think that's something, it sounds like Norvell and Atkins and whichever coach you're going to point out, does not sugarcoat and lie to the player. They're not like, you're going to come in as a freshman and play day one. You're not going to come in as a transfer day one and play. Mm-hmm. They tell them, you're going to come in and you're going to have to earn your spot. You're going to have to work in practice. You're going to have to work really hard and earn that spot. No, nothing is given to anyone. Johnny Wilson came in, earned his spot. Trey Benson, took his lumps early in the season and took over his spot. Jared Burse came in, and he's talented enough that he came in and won that job. Maurice Smith hosted Jaden Lyles. Lyles obviously got hurt, didn't play, but they competed with each other. You have to come in and earn your spot with this team, and that's something Atkins said, talking to him yesterday, said, is what the players, it's not even what the coaches tell the players, the recruits, it's what the players tell the recruits, and that's how you get people to come here, because as Atkins pointed out, he said, you know, it's one thing if a coach tells you something, can they go to the player and verify it? When the player and the coach are on the same page and telling you the same story, you're going to come here and understand that you're not just going to come here and get a job because of you're a five-star guy. I think Hakeem knows that. I think Lucas Sims, though, knows. I'm not coming in as a four-star guy and earning playing time right away just because of my name and because of my stars.
It's funny, whenever I talk to Atkins, how confident he is. He's just like, literally ask any player on the team. Ask the third-team center, and he'll tell you the same thing that everyone else does. And, you know, I don't know if you can say that about every position group, but, you know, overall, you also have to factor in looking at the 24 class when you think about where this group is at from a recruiting standpoint. And I think those who are concerned, like, I think you're – it's okay to be concerned about this class. It's okay to say, oh, wow, 29th on Rivals? That's the lowest ranking that this program has ever had on Rivals. Now, it may improve, but 27th was the lowest before that. Now it's 29. So yeah, not great. And the transfer portal market, as great as it is every year, you're not always going to hit on guys. You're going to have Bless Harris and Caden Lyles get hurt. You're going to have, you know, a guy you think is going to be a great player, really not that be that great. Or maybe they don't acclimate the way that you want, or maybe they don't have the grades. Like, you don't, FSU has kind of hit the lottery these last 2 years, and you got to give them credit, because they did a great job evaluating guys like Trey Benson and Jared Burse, but that may not happen every year. So you got to get high school guys. And in 2024, the encouraging thing, they're a top five class right now. They've got guys like Cam Davis. They got guys like Luke Krummenhoek. So the light is at the end of the tunnel, but the key for them is, can they close on these guys? As Luke Krummenhoek gets all these offers, I keep saying Hoke, it's Hawk. As Luke Krummenhoek gets all these offers from big programs, will he remain committed to FSU? I talked to him about it about a month ago. I'm writing a story about him. He was very much like, I want to hear these coaches. I want to have communication with other schools out of respect for them, but I'm 100% committed to FSU. So he's sort of in this mindset where he'll hear out other schools, but that doesn't mean he's interested in them. So it's something worth watching. These big-time guys in the next class, will they, venture elsewhere? I think the fact that they are going to have they had a great year this year, they're going to have a great year next year, that will help them. You have to remember, this class was built off a 5-7 season. So it should only get better, but it's good to emphasize that it's very important that they get their act together at certain positions, and that they don't have, they got to crack the top 15. They haven't cracked the top 15 since the 2017 class, and that's certainly not good.
So you mentioned you have the Luke feature coming up next week. Later this week, actually, you mentioned. I'll have the superlatives list of this signing class probably tomorrow morning. Check it out. Anything else you're working on, Carter?
Yeah, I've got a story on I don't know how I did it, but the OU athletic director, Joe Castiglione, is Michael Alford's mentor, and they know each other very well, and he gave me some pretty good insight on how Florida State, before they unveiled their football-only facility, while they were working on the project, they let Mike Norvell, Michael Alford, David Coburn, lots of other folks tied to FSU visit OU's facility. They went and saw the Rams, the Packers, the Giants, the Cowboys, the University of Alabama to see these facilities. And just talking about the relationship that he has with Alfred, I thought was pretty interesting. And then obviously we will be getting to Orlando Christmas night. So that should be fun. So that will be what I am working on. And then, yeah, we'll have Cheez-It Bowl coverage throughout the week.
And plenty of Cheez-Its to eat, I believe, is the case.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait, man. Well, I think that's all that we got for you guys today. Want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. I want to wish everyone a Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, Happy whatever you celebrate, Happy Gummy Bears and candy and stocking goodies that you get. I mean, this is a wonderful time of the year. I'm not eating Cheez-Its right now. I'm saving it all for next week. I want to just like go on a Cheez-It craze. I've like intentionally not eaten any Cheez-Its for a month. So I'm ready for it. Excited. It's going to be a fun bowl game. So with that, we appreciate you guys for listening.
Thank you, guys.